Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
For those of you who have not, heard me talk before, I warn you, it might occur more like stand-up comedy. This is just the way I roll, my friends. I'm English, and there are only four things I like: humor, soccer, warm beer, and rock music. There is a fifth, but we cannot talk about that in polite company. But anyway, I digress. There is method in my madness of being funny in a Dharma talk. Someone once said that humor makes difficult things more palatable. So there. Sometimes I think I should be serious in my Dharma talks, and then I think, nah. As some of you know, I am a teacher of math at De Anza College. I found that teaching a subject greatly increases one's understanding of it. One is forced to go deeper to explain things clearly and to be ready for any questions that students throw at you. Being able to get an A in a subject and being able to teach it are two different skill sets. Many great mathematicians have never taught, so teaching is not a necessary requirement for understanding. However, I personally find solitary study difficult. As the Buddha realized, we need a sangha, a community, for pretty much everything except maybe cleaning our teeth. In other words, human beings are very weak by themselves, but with others we can be very strong. So this talk is mainly to increase my understanding of anger. In other words, I'm using you for my own selfish desires. But I digress. There are three parts to the talk: an introduction, causes, and cures. By the way, I like to talk about numbers and I like math. I think that is why I like Buddhism, because they like numbers, 16 precepts, eightfold path, 37 bodhisattva practices, etc. Now, if only Buddhists played soccer and drank warm beer. Yeah. Anyway, back to the talk. Let's start with the introduction. As often happens when one attempts to shine a light on something in life, life throws it at you in spades. So let me elucidate. By the way, in this talk, I will try to use as many long words as possible, as I am insecure and want you to admire me. But I digress again. Here's a true story of anger that happened to me on Sunday. I will use this as an illustration of anger through the talk. There is a bad word in the story. My apologies. It starts with a D and is a man's name. My apologies once again. On Sunday, I went to Bikram yoga. This is the very hot and humid yoga. Some of you might have been to this thing or heard about it. As is the custom for many in the yoga class, we put our mats down before the class starts, which is what I did. Then I went to change. When I got back, somebody had put their mat next to mine, literally 6 inches away, a blank page, from mine. That's emptiness right there. That's the emptiness. That's the only Dharma in this talk. Most people spread out as much as possible. Who wants to get somebody else's sweat on them? In this pose, now kick your leg out. Disgusting, you know. So the room was half full there, and there was oodles of space. So when I got there, the guy with the mat next to me said, "Can you move your mat to the side, as my girlfriend can't, because she can't see the mirror, so she can see the mirror." There is a mirror at the front of the room, and people try to stagger the mats as much as possible so everybody can see the mirror. However, if you're on the fourth row is the back row. If you're on the fourth row from the mirror, which his girlfriend was on, then as far as I am concerned, you give up your right to see the mirror. Anyway, I looked behind me, and his girlfriend was not even directly behind me. I was like, what the hell? I was not in a very calm state at the time. People were starting to look at us like, oh, this is interesting. I wonder what is going to happen. I think they thought they were watching Days of Our Lives. Anyway, what was happening was I was getting incensed. Self-righteousness, the injustice of the situation, how men always try to dominate me. It was all welling up in me. Thoughts were bombarding my mind like, am I going to stand for this? Am I a man or a mouse? Give me some cheese. Let's see what I do. Even though I knew he was being a jerk, I moved a few feet to the side. But then I could not see the mirror. Then I got angry and said, I cannot see now. And he was smirking at me. At least I thought he was. He may just have had gas. By the way, gas. Gas is a difficult audience tonight. By the way, this gas is a big no-no in Bikram yoga. I mean, people are sweaty. Anyway, but I digress. Some sense seemed to creep into me at that moment, and I decided to move far away from him. My route to get away from him involved, interestingly enough, passing really close to him. As I went past him, the devil got to me, as the Irish like to say. I was this close to a clean getaway, and I said, see ya, Dick. True. There was a look of surprise as he registered what I had said, and then 10 seconds later, he followed me across the room. He was a little slow. That is not a judgment. We Buddhists do not judge. I am just reporting the facts of the story. He said, this is a true story. He said, do you think my name is Richard? I kid you not. I said, no, your name is Dick because you behave like one. Anyway, I do not think he heard me as I said it under my breath, as by this time, fear was beginning to kick in. He was bigger than me. Pretty much every man is bigger than me. Maybe they are. Maybe I should move to Vietnam. Then I would be a giant. But I digress. He went back to his place jauntily as if he had won. I knew it was a tie. Men like to know the score. You know, we're very competitive. Anyway, all through yoga, my mind would return to this incident, and I would start to go through possible scenarios of bad things happening later in the car park. I thought he might call his homies afterward, as he looked a bit like a gang member. I spoke to her afterwards, and she assured me that no gang members do hot yoga. They don't do Bikram. Well, anyway, nothing happened. We had both calmed down by the end of yoga. We did meet in the changing rooms, and we both gave each other the evil eye. Ah, true Buddhism in action. So inspirational. So what have I learned about anger in my 47 years of meditation? Not a lot, you might say, if this last situation is anything to go by. But I disagree. There are many things connected to anger. Judgment, resentment, hate, and the opposite, of course, forgiveness. Mainly I'll be dealing with just anger, as this talk could get really long, and I want to eat cookies and go to bed soon. So let's talk about anger. Anger is one of the outward expressions of hate, and it is extremely dangerous. If one of us in yoga had hit each other, we could have ended up in jail. Our families would have been devastated, my job could have been affected. One out of control moment and life is completely altered. We think that anger is an external event. We think that the situation made me angry, but this is not true. All that happened was a man put his mat close to mine and said some words. That's all that happened. Everything else was in my head. Every single emotion and thought was created by me. Sometimes people say, I do not get angry. I think people, especially children and women, bury their anger, as it is extremely dangerous to get angry when you are physically not as strong. We then get deluded into thinking we are not angry people. Apparently, the Dalai Lama admitted that he gets angry, and he's not even married. Hard to believe. I'm reminded of a question somebody asked Mother Teresa. They asked her if she could really understand married people's problem if she was not married. And she said, "I am too married. I am married to God, and he can be really difficult." In all my years of meditation, I've not yet met somebody who did not have anger. When I was at Zen Center Los Angeles in 1983, a teacher came to visit who said he never got angry. He said he had gone beyond it. I put my hand up and asked him some rude questions and tried to get him upset. I did not succeed, but I still do not believe him. I remember Jack Kornfield, a famous Vipassana teacher, who told a story of when he had to give a guided loving kindness meditation, which is the sutra that we just chanted appropriately tonight, I think. And so this guided loving kindness meditation is designed to produce feelings of love towards others. However, he had just had a fight with his wife. So he started off in his best meditation teacher voice. "Just let your mind reach out to somebody you know. Send them feelings of love and kindness. I will get her. Just you wait. In your mind, say, may they be well. May they be happy. If she thinks this is over, she's got another thing coming." Some people see nothing wrong with anger. A survey of American parents, I looked this up on the internet, found that about 94% of the ones with children 3 to 4 years old had spanked their child within the past year. To me, corporal punishment is getting your anger out on a defenseless person. And then the parents justify it. "You know this is for your own good, don't you?" Etc., etc. I believe corporal punishment is lazy parenting. You have to go deep to understand why our child is behaving in a way you do not like, as children naturally want to please their parents. Misbehaving children are usually in emotional pain. When I first started teaching, I was naive about human beings. I saw experienced male teachers yelling at the kids, and I was determined not to be like them. But some children are like sharks, smelling blood. They smell weakness and they attack. It did not take them long to figure out I was easy prey. So right, this was at the beginning. My classes kind of fell apart. This was at the high school level. I did not know how to get control of my classes. I was given coaching, but nothing worked. I then got angry in class. Maybe the experienced teachers knew what they were doing. When you get angry in a class, it at first quiets them down, as the children get scared. But then they realize that you're out of control and they lose respect for you. Then they play up more. My angry outbursts have less effect as they know that is all they are. Nothing bad is actually going to happen to them. Many teachers today still use anger as a way to get control. It has the illusion of succeeding as it often happens quickly. The results are quick. The class gets quiet and you think it is working. In the long run, it does not work. Anger is a form of violence and it never works. Being in a classroom in those early years of teaching felt like being in the yoga room over and over again. It felt like they were throwing darts at me. One would stab me and I would go, "Ouch, that hurt." Be with the experience. Be in the moment. Then another dart would hit. Ugh. I would start the day calm. By noon, I was a raging maniac, or worse, a defeated man. Now, they weren't actually throwing darts, by the way. But it felt like that. When they say things, and in my mind, it would go, "Ow, ow." I taught at this middle school once, many years ago. Next door to me was this young man, also new in teaching. We both were in our first year at the school. Every day we would stagger out of the classroom at break and slump against the wall. I would say, "How's it going?" And he would say, "Great." And we would both laugh hysterically. Those 15 minutes of break time were so precious. I could smell flowers on the breeze, see insects from 50 yards. Okay, I'm exaggerating. then break would end. It would be like going over the top of the trenches in World War I. We would take a deep breath and charge back in, yelling as we went, "Jimmy, put down Samantha's pen. Stop writing on her face." Eventually, I figured something out. I figured out I was extremely sensitive. The problem was not really them so much as my reactions to them. I later hit upon the idea of communicating with the students, but not to all of them as a whole, but one at a time. I started speaking to them outside of the class. This practice is frowned upon by most teachers and the administration, as you leave the class unattended. But in life, there is what you are supposed to do and what actually works, and often they are different. When talking to them, I realized they were people. They did not occur as people in the classroom. I started doing this practice more often. Whenever I got upset, I would talk to a child, a young person, as they are today. I teach college. Preferably the next day. So you wait for the reaction to die down and then you talk to them the next day. I would usually start off the same way. "Are you mad at me?" And they would say, "No, Mr. Legg, you're cool." And just like that, the upset would disappear. I could see they were not mad at me. That is my biggest cause of upsets, thinking somebody hates me. I found that communicating about upsets can be very powerful, but it does not always work. I did try it in the middle of a retreat once. I thought somebody was mad at me. Now, you're not supposed to talk in a retreat. It did not go well. Why is this guy coming up to me? Retreats are a very different space. I highly recommend them, by the way, especially long ones. But usually outside of retreats, it goes well, as long as you use plenty of I words. Don't use you words. So what are the causes of anger? Let us look at the causes, which sometimes are useful to curing it. The Buddha was not into the causes of things. He said, if one has an arrow on one side, one removes the arrow. We do not need to know who was the archer, where the arrow was made, how much it cost, can I get it on eBay? If Buddha had his way, the whole psychotherapy movement would disappear. But I digress. I'm not sure I quite agree with Buddha. I once did many classes with an organization called Landmark Education. They really studied human beings more from a practical philosophical viewpoint rather than a psychological one. They said upset is caused by one or more of three things: a thwarted intention, an unfulfilled expectation, and an undelivered communication. Well, think about those for a little bit. All three elements were present in my interaction with the man at yoga. A thwarted intention is a three-year-old conversation. I was saying, "I want, it's mine. This mat is mine. I want it. I want it." It is a tantrum. When the man asked me to move my mat, it was like, "This is my spot. Not fair. Not fair." An unfulfilled expectation is a bunch of shoulds. Everybody knows that you do not put your mat that close to mine. You certainly do not ask somebody to move because you want their spot. Everybody knows that. Be careful of thoughts that start off with "everybody knows." Undelivered communications were present in spades. Neither of us started off with "hi, my name is," maybe a smile if possible, and then "would you mind moving your mat to accommodate my girlfriend? I would really appreciate it." Communication is a way of cutting off anger before it starts. Women are excellent at this. They've had millennia of training in how to keep a man calm. It is in their DNA. Number one is smile. Try to be angry with somebody who just smiled at you. It's not possible. If the person in yoga had been a beautiful young woman and she had smiled at me, I would not have had the slightest problem with moving my mat. But I digress. Of course, not being present to what is happening emotionally to oneself is a real problem. I was upset coming into the yoga room, and I was only vaguely aware of it. Often I am angry and I do not know it, as was the case that day. This is a very dangerous situation. Sometimes I just feel bad and I do not know what that feeling is. I cannot label it. I just feel bad. I used to have this a lot as a teenager. Today, my wife will look at me and say, "Are you mad at me? Or what is your problem?" And I realize, oh, I'm angry. That is what is going on. When I feel bad, the emotion that is going on is anger, 99% of the time. My daughter will look at me sometimes and say, "Everything good? You okay?" She senses the upset, and she's figuring out whether she has to leave the room. I'm glad my daughter can talk to me like that. I can never go to my dad and say, "Why are you in a bad mood right now?" I probably would not be here today if I said that. Yikes. But I digress. So being present is so important. Checking in with yourself frequently throughout the day, feeling your body's sensations. What thoughts are present? Do not get into the stories around the emotions. None of the she said, he said stuff. Just what is present? These three causes, thwarted intention, unfulfilled expectation, etc., could be summed up as thoughts that form in our head and we get attached to them. Anger can be useful to seeing how our minds work. Because anger is so powerful and so destructive that we are motivated to go back and look at what happened, how we got attached. I think for the most part, we do not see this whole process of thoughts arising and attachment to them happening, but it's happening all the time. So I remember that incident with vivid clarity, but I cannot remember what I had for breakfast, like yesterday. So anger can be useful in hindsight. So what are the cures? They say that patience is one of the cures for anger, but what is patience? I must admit, I don't like the word patience. It sounds judgy, and I hate to being judged. I hate being judged. But I digress again. Slowing down is part of patience. Planning things out so you do not have to rush. Allowing others to be angry without reacting. By having a soft mind. Do not make a decision until you are calm. So with the yoga guy, I was not sure what to do. So removing myself was a good decision. Calling him a bad word was also a good decision, as he needed to know the truth about himself. Just kidding. I'm kidding. When I get in a car, it will be a good practice to breathe a few times and tell oneself that you are driving a very dangerous machine and to not react. Do not hurry. Just a few seconds as you get into the car. Allow people to tailgate and do crazy stuff. I will just calmly drive along. Breathing is a form of patience. Taking deep breaths is useful when angry. We can use our mind if it is able to function in the moments of extreme anger. If it's possible, we could see they're helping us see ourselves. The person who's making us angry is giving us a gift. The yoga guy was giving me a gift. I should have given him a gift back. But I take it. But seriously, if you can see it like that, it is hard to get angry. There are many other reflections that may help. Realizing that we're all going to die. Realizing that anger is a delusion. A delusion that I and this other thing are separate objects banging up against each other. But these are things that are more useful as reflections to prepare us for anger that arises. In the moment when extreme anger arises, breathing and getting away from the situation and saying nothing and doing nothing else are often the only appropriate responses. What other methods are there for dealing with anger? Jack Kornfield, a famous Vipassana teacher, said there are four main ways of dealing with difficulties. Not just anger, but any kind of difficulty. He said they get increasingly karmically problematic as we go through the list. So let us apply the list to when we get angry. The first way of dealing with a difficulty, the first technique, would be to let go. Or as one of my first Zen teachers in England used to say, forget about it. He used to be in the mafia. I kid. I have never been much good at letting go. I do remember being incredibly upset with someone once at the Zen Center. I mentioned the Zen Center, Los Angeles. And then I did a 7-day meditation retreat, and by the end, the upset had completely disappeared. I remembered the reasons why I was upset, but there was no emotion behind them. It was a very strange experience for me. It really had just disappeared. It had not been suppressed. It really had disappeared. Normally, I carry resentments around for years. This letting go is not the same as when people say, so I'm going to talk about suppression now, when people say, I'm not angry with them. Why should I be angry? I've moved on. That's all in the past. That doesn't serve anything to get angry. When people start justifying why they are not angry, be suspicious. Most likely they have suppressed it. It is there but just buried. Later it comes out as passive aggression. When one gets angry, one forgets who one really is. One becomes the emotion. So letting go would be first to let go of the thoughts that are around the emotion, and then focus on the energy. Then see the emotion as a powerful wave on the ocean, seeing yourself as the wave for a moment, and then you return to the ocean. It is a question of being. Who are you, the wave or the ocean? Letting go requires a high degree of presence. The second way of dealing with anger, according to Jack Kornfield, is to be with the experience. One goes into the body as one does in meditation. One can breathe deeply a few times as a way of getting into the body. One can close one's eyes to cut oneself off from visual disturbances, such as the angry, stupid yoga guy. Oops, I'm digressing again. One experiences the sensations in the body. What are they? Where are they located? Is there heat? Is there some kind of pain? Is it increasing or decreasing in intensity? Doing this gets you out of the story. The story is the problem, not the feelings. The story is what makes you act inappropriately. The story of, I cannot believe you're doing this, I need to stand up for myself, etc., etc. Of course, closing your eyes and breathing will probably occur as strange for the people watching you if you are angry at a person. And we are very concerned about looking good and not appearing weird. But if we are about to clock the guy, I think we should choose weirdness over prison. Just saying. In the TV show Ally McBeal, raise your hand if you've seen the show Ally McBeal. Long time ago. Old show. Good show. There was this lawyer called John Cage who used to say, whenever he was upset, he used to say, I need a moment. And in the middle of people were talking to him, I need a moment, and he'd close his eyes and he'd go inside and people were like, What are you doing? I found this very impressive. This technique should reduce the charge on the anger. Sometimes, after a little time being with it, you may be able to let go. I sit in a full lotus. During meditation retreats, I get quite extreme pain in the knees. Moving when the pain gets past a certain point just makes things worse. Because then you've given in to the pain and your concentration gets destroyed. It is better to deal with it, to just deal with the pain. I will go into the pain and focus on it, and sometimes it disappears. I know intellectually that there is pain in my knees, but it occurs as space. I do not know how else to describe it. I think this is possible with anger as well. The third way of dealing with anger is to suppress it. Suppression is bad, you're probably thinking, but it has its uses. If you're a heart surgeon and you've just had a terrible row with your wife and somebody is brought into emergency needing heart surgery, you may have time to spend a few seconds going into the anger and letting go or being with it and then letting go, but maybe that does not work. So the only thing to do is to suppress it or compartmentalize it. You can say, I will deal with that later. I looked this up on the internet, suppression. And they found that suppression does not work, as you actually have more thoughts on the subject, as you have added now a layer of thoughts on top of the thoughts you're trying to suppress. So the suppressing thoughts are, I will not think that. I will stop thinking about that. It's like, so trying not to think about pink elephants makes you think more about them, right? But hold up. What about suppression of trauma? When I was about 6, I was put in a hospital with measles and separated from my mother for 2 weeks. This was a traumatic experience for me. And it was, I suppressed that experience, for sure. I know it was suppressed because it's taken years of meditation and therapy to remember even little parts of it. So the suppression worked in a way in that it is buried deep in the subconscious. But the experience has not really disappeared. It lives on inside my brain, affecting the way I see the world. I think suppression works if one is sufficiently motivated to make it work. That experience was so bad, I could not live with it, as people who have had post-traumatic syndrome will attest to. They suppress it. But the problem is, even if it works, the issue has not been resolved, it's just been buried. The fourth way of dealing with anger, or any difficulty, is the most fun way. Act out. I'm just kidding about that. That was a joke about the fun part. The key to this method is to bring awareness to the acting out. When I first came to America, I met this guy who is really into primal scream therapy. Who's heard of primal scream therapy? Anybody heard of that? Some of you are showing your age here. But in this therapy, you beat pillows and say stuff, mostly bad things, about your parents, sometimes for hours. He invited me to try it. I thought, why not? I love experimenting. So he put a pillow in front of me and he told me to say what I had always wanted to say to my dad, and then I would beat the pillow. I would talk and get angry and smash the pillow in fury. I beat the pillow so hard, I actually tore the skin off my knuckles. Hard to believe with a pillow, isn't it? They were bleeding. He was so proud of me. He took a picture of my bleeding knuckles. I ain't kidding you. Good times. But not sure what he did with the pictures. Probably on the internet somewhere. So this primal therapy is an example of acting out, but with awareness. Did it help? I'm really not sure. I think it may be useful if one's anger is really buried or suppressed. Maybe useful then. There was a Buddhist teacher who used to be addicted to gulab jam, which is an Indian dessert. You know about gulab jam, don't you? They are really sticky and sweet. One teacher said that gulab jam makes baklava taste like dry toast. Anyway, he ate a load of them at one time while meditating. It cured him of his addiction. My daughter, at 2 years of age, announced to me that she was going to eat only cookies from now on. She was extremely addicted to cookies. I thought, that can't be good. Then I thought, what's the worst that can happen? So I bought a ton of cookies from Whole Foods, so they were reasonably healthy, and she tucked in. She kept it up for 2 weeks. Now she does not eat cookies much. She will have one now and again. I eat more than she does. And that is all I have to say on anger. I sound like Forrest Gump, but I digress. Oh, wait, I've realized something else about giving talks. If you are dealing with some problem, give a talk on it. So my next talk will be on dealing with difficult spouses. And altogether, I digress. All right, thank you very much. Have we got much? Is there time left? We're done? Wow, that went bad.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.